You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
You are listening to Fanboy Versus. This week it is Fanboy Versus Movieverse, as most of our news this week is about stuff going on in comic book movies. But we will be talking about comic books as well, as we do every week. So welcome. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you all today?
Not excellent. Bad.
Okay, then.
Alive.
Alive. Which is better than the opposite.
I'm noticing that you... Where is Ender this week, JD?
Ender, yes. Ender is not here. We are with our regular crew, but yes, Ender is off defending our universe against the
off defending universe. Comic book reference number 51. There we go.
Yes.
We
can move on. Comic book reference 51. He is in the Cancerverse, which we'll talk about later when we talk about Thanos Imperative. So,
just like Superman, Triplett is a dick.
Yes.
you mean Ultimate Cap?
Nah.
Not Superman.
I don't know. Superman is also kind of a dick.
Super dickery, Chris. Look
but
at
we
that.
Know. We know I'm biased. Since I hate Superman. God, I hate Superman. Anyway, every time I think about it. So, news this week. We finally got some new images. We kind of maybe talked about this maybe a little bit last week, but we have actually more images for Captain America and Thor from the movieverse. And what do we think for Captain?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's all right.
I like it. It's kind of a nice hybrid, I think, for the Captain uniform.
I think it needs. It just needs the boots and gloves to be red.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. It's a little. There's not enough red in the red, white, and blue. If he took the shield off his arm, I don't think there's enough red there.
Stylish looking suspenders or a belt or whatever the heck that is that he's wearing. You know?
Yeah.
You see, I kind of like that. That's clever. Like, that's a nice way of working around the red and white stripes on the midriff.
Yeah. Yeah. It works. It's good.
And he's got a very ultimate-y, helmet-y hat on him there as well. I'm sort of thinking this is probably his World War II outfit anyway.
I don't know. That looks very modern. I thought they said this was the modern.
Yeah, it was. But I can't... I just think that it needs more... I mean, of course, these are only concept images, let's be honest. I mean, it may very well turn out... The lace-up boots and all the little pouches just look very World War II-ish. But then you see that... But then once you get outside of the harness and the boots and the gloves and the helmet, the actual bodysuit itself does look rather modern-y.
I'm just glad it's not Cap armor, you know, or something stupid like that.
I'm sure that's all. That would be fantastic.
Like a Green Goblin-esque Captain American suit from Spider-Man.
Oh, God.
Cap Wolf is great, too.
Yeah, Cap Wolf, yeah.
You'll see of that for the seventh film. Cap 7, The Howling.
Now we have also some promotional images for Thor as well.
Yeah, we do.
Full images that we didn't have. We had like just a little snippet, and that, so these are.
I like those better.
Images.
I like that better.
You know, they all seem to be just, you know, digital drawings, so they're not actual photographs. But literally the only thing I can say against Thor is that I'd rather see him have mail on his upper legs rather than those trouser type things he seems to be wearing.
Yeah. I have to say though, between both of these, I like that they're getting away from the sort of latex, you know, adhesive superhero costumes that had been the staple of like 90s superhero movies.
You know, X-Men totally had the leather thing down, and I didn't much care for that. So I kind of like the latexy thing. I think it was a better advancement than. Not.
So you prefer the latex?
Yeah, I do. I really do, especially with Spider-Man.
So I wonder if Thor's going to have a hat.
Sorry?
I wonder if Thor's going to have a hat.
That is what everybody's asking. And he does look a little naked without the hat. He's like,
I could see him doing it without
it. To the neck, and then he's Ultimate Thor from the neck up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could see him dropping the hat and just not even having it in the movie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't object to it overly if they did, but it just kind of sets off the whole look. I mean, they've done such a good job with the concept. Otherwise, cape.
As long as the hammer is right, which the hammer would look pretty, you know, from the designs, looks pretty good. But I think the hammer's more important than the hat.
Am I a nerd or lame for saying I think the handle's too short? I think it could just be like, you know, just a.
I know people have said that, but that's as short as the handle should be. I mean,
yeah, I think that looks about right. It's just
I think, like, classically in myth, Mjolnir had a big handle, had a long handle. It was like a war hammer that was supposed to be wielded two-handed.
I don't want like a steel, you know, type hammer.
I think that's what it was kind of like in myth, but I don't know. I'm not a myth.
A little longer, just like, you know, down to the strap where the strap is. That's what I would like. But
I don't know. I think that would be too long. Yeah, that seems too long. Especially, I mean, again, since it is the comic book verse, and it's no bigger than that, definitely, in the comic.
It seems a pretty accurate sort of comic length there. Just long enough for him to basically get his two hands around it.
They better have a hammer roleplay accessory where the top of the hammer lights up blue like that.
Man, if you think they won't.
Oh yeah,
they're gonna have to take it out of soft foam rubber or something, Hulk hand style.
Yeah. Oh man, there's gonna be some dead kids out there for sure. Yeah. God.
So the light up aspect may be somewhat challenging, but they'll definitely get some clips in there. So when you bang it like Hulk hands, it'll go.
Oh gosh.
Sound effects or something.
Some sort of lightning sound effectors.
Head of the mallet. They make the whole head of the mallet foam. And the electronics are all in the handle, and the very tip of the handle pokes out of the top of the foam, and it lights up blue.
There you go.
I can just see the headlines now.
I might
four children bludgeoned to death by Thor hammer.
That's a way for people to learn how to pronounce the name, because so many kids will die from it.
I know, John.
Yeah, I've heard
so
like
four newscasters going to be out there in a year and a half. They'll be like, apparently the children were using a replica of
It's like that Icelandic volcano a few months ago. It was just the Icelandic volcano because nobody could.
A volcano. God.
Tidal wave in Kuala France.
That was great.
So anyway, Joe Quesada has been promoted enough that he won't do damage to the Marvelverse, we hope.
Woo-hoo!
No?
The title doesn't sound like a promotion. Editor-in-chief sounds like really important, you know.
Yeah, the reality is chief creative officer, which I'm sure that he looked across the pond and said, hey, Jeff Johns is a chief creator. I want to be a chief creator.
You are no Jeff Johns, sir.
You are no Jeff Johns, sir. You are not even.
Well, it says here in the article that prior to the promotion, he held the role of chief creative officer and editor-in-chief.
Yeah, I'm totally thinking that. I mean, it's such a BS title anyway.
It's a bit. We still don't really know what it is that Jeff Johns is doing now.
Right.
It's like everyone at a bank is a vice president. Doesn't mean that they make president money.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, basically, though, all this seems to mean is that Quesada's like scope for overseeing has expanded from both previously it was publishing and animation, and it has essentially now expanded to and cover like overseeing of films as well.
To ensure
that all portrayals of Marvel's characters and storytelling remain true to the essence of Marvel's rich history.
So,
which I always think is a really, really nebulous statement. So, it doesn't seem to mean anything, really.
What I was really hoping is that they would promote him far enough that he couldn't do damage any more so than he's done. So basically, they've promoted him now to where he can do complete damage and completely obliterate
Marvel. You know what they should promote him to? Chief cover artist.
Yes. You know, not lucky he's not that anymore.
He'd be fantastic at that. But
he's really good at that. And that's it. Just covers. Here you go, Joe.
I don't think this really means anything.
Yeah, it's probably not going to change anything. I mean, I know, it's not like he wasn't, you know.
I mean, yes, it opens its way for a lot of alarmist nerds to make, you know, to seriously make comments that you guys have just jokingly made. But I really don't think it actually will mean much.
No, it's probably not going to change anything. It'll be okay.
I mean, Joe basically got the three big bugbears that he had out of his system in recent years with One More Day and Civil War and whatever the other one was. I've already forgotten. I cared so little. So, you know, he doesn't actually seem to be striving to accomplish any personal vendettas anymore. So,
good. Good. He's done the damage that he's going to do.
Awesome. Yes. That's a way to look at it.
So some guy named Donald Glover wants to be Spider-Man.
I'm actually looking at his Twitter page right now. I don't really get it.
He's an actor on Community. Now, I haven't seen Community.
Oh.
But I've heard many good things about it.
It's a show that you're supposed to be watching, but you're not, right?
Yeah, it is. It is the new hot sitcom. None of us have watched it, I think. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, even though I'm a big fan of Joel McHale, I've not managed to watch the show.
Well, it is apparently the show you should be watching.
Okay. Anyway,
so,
all right.
So
well,
the point, maybe. Anyway, that before we just skip right over that, the point is that he's black.
Oh, well, why does that matter?
Well, this is the question, isn't it? Can the world handle a black Spider-Man?
Yeah.
We did for like 4 or 5 years back in the 80s.
Yeah. I don't think it doesn't make a difference to me. I mean, what matters is the writing good? Is the, you know, I mean, is the acting going to hold up, and is the story going to be good? I think the only way it wouldn't work is if they made it about him being black. As long as they made it about him being Spider-Man, then I think it could be, it has the potential to be just as good a story as anything.
Yeah, I mean,
if they make it about him being a black Spider-Man, then I think that's going to taint the whole point of the thing.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want them to change the Spider-Man mythos that he was a poor kid living in a bad neighborhood and his parents were dead and then one of his relatives got shot. That would be, I mean, you wouldn't want that to happen at all.
We did accept, though, a 35-year-old Spider-Man, so I think we can accept it.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're we have, like, what, like a 50-year-old Tony Stark right now?
Yeah. Which,
yeah,
I'm more okay.
It's Hollywood. Hollywood can get away with anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind. I'm not a big fan of casting, like, of being diverse for diversity's sake. See, Spectacular Spider-Man, for instance. To keep within the Spider-Man frame of mind. That's a cartoon, so you can sort of get away with it a little more. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to tell me that he was, you know, he walks in there and he auditions and he gives the best performance and would, out of everybody that they auditioned, be the best choice for the role, you know, absolutely go for it. I didn't have a problem with Michael Clark Duncan as the Kingpin. I really enjoyed him.
No.
That was about casting an actor who was of the physical presence of the role. You know?
It had nothing to do with his race. It had entirely everything to do with the movie.
But compare this, say, with Alicia Masters in the Fantastic Four movie, because you're not going to tell me she came in there and acted blind the best, you know. That movie was just terribly full of pretty white people. And Alicia got a little bit of a, what TV Tropes calls a race lift to atone for that. And Spectacular Spider-Man, honestly, I find Spectacular Spider-Man did it, just to keep it in the comics and stuff, did it to the point of distraction. I mean, you guys all watched Spectacular Spider-Man, didn't you?
Nope.
The cartoon?
You sinner!
I know.
Yeah, the show's awesome.
You've been telling me.
I want my season 2 really bad on DVD.
Yeah. I think
I've been trying to get Brian to watch it, but he won't listen.
Hey.
Dude, seriously, watch the show. Despite the fact that I have led into discussing it by moaning about an aspect of it, watch the show; it's excellent. But I mean, I still they do that. They change quite a few races in like some notable and some non-notable ways. Like Kenny Kong from The Ultimates becoming Asian, didn't notice it didn't had to have it pointed out to me, you know. Liz Allen becoming past Hispanic. That's the one. Well, let's say that they turned Fancy Dan became black. Deborah Whitman was black. Liz Allen became Hispanic. Gene DeWolf appeared to become Hispanic. There's definitely some others I'm forgetting now.
Changing them up didn't really bother me too bad.
There's nothing about that. I mean, aside from the fact that Ned Leeds became Ned Lee, and that was like kind of eye rolling.
Oh,
but there was definitely some others that I've since forgotten. But the thing I kind of got hung up on it from the very start, because the first episode kicks off with Peter striding bro boldly into school and saying he's going to ask out his big crush, who is a white blonde cheerleader, and I'm like, Liz Allen. No, it's Sally Avril.
Yeah.
So it turns out they've turned Liz Allen, and she's become Hispanic for the character. So they take Liz Allen, who in the comics was Peter's first crush and a white blonde cheerleader, and they turn her Hispanic, and then they repurpose Sally Avril, who was white and dark-haired in the comic, into a blonde white cheerleader, and make her Peter's first crush. What was the point? Why didn't you just make Sally Hispanic?
I don't know.
I got hung up on it as a consequence of that, so every time that they then proceeded to change somebody's race, it jumped out at me. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a... But, I mean, because it's a cartoon, the fact that they are purely doing it for diversity's sake stood out. I mean, there was no other reason to do it than to do it for diversity's sake. And I suppose it's a fair comment, as I believe Wiseman made more than once, was that it is trying to create a more realistic portrait of New York today. And
true,
if you do look at Spider-Man's, as by virtue of being created in the 60s, he does have a very white supporting cast.
What do you think about Catwoman? I hope none of us...
Well, I don't care, because it wasn't Selena Kyle, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, see, I didn't watch it.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, well sadly I did, but I didn't pay money for it, so don't worry. But she's not Selena Kyle, so it doesn't matter. I don't care. You know, she was another character entirely. Not that I'm saying I don't care either way, but it's like, I like the look of this. I don't know this Donald Glover, but I do have plans to watch Community sometime soon, and I've seen some pictures of him, and I like the look of him. He's quite loaded, quite funny, and I'd be willing to see him give it a go. Yeah, you know, it looks like it'd be good.
It could work.
As long as JD says, if they just make him it about him being Spider-Man and don't repurpose the whole story to make him about being a black Spider-Man. It's always a bumpy road to walk on.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But, hey, I mean, like I said, I think it could work. I don't have a problem with it, per se. I mean, I don't think it's like, oh, you're ruining, you know, the mythos. I think it could work. It's just, I think it's, they would just have him do it. If he's the best, great. Let him do it, and just, like I said, it would just be, don't make it about him being black. Make it about him being Spider-Man. So.
I want Sam Jackson as Spider-Man.
There you go. Except, damn. So, let's see. Green Lantern movie logo designs revealed.
Somebody's got Photoshop. Sweet.
Yeah.
Not much to say there. It looks like pretty much what you would expect it to look like.
There you go. Green Lantern.
Didn't show up the symbol.
Nope. Which is good. Thank you. Didn't try to make it weird or artsy. It's just...
Got this anyone can be chosen tagline as well. Which isn't strictly true.
No. Oh, yeah, well, it is. What is it that Ganthet said to Kyle's, like, you know, you might as well do, or something like that, as he...
Don't remember. Didn't read Kyle's stuff back in the day.
So, yeah.
you might.
Like, but I mean, I get. I mean, they seem to be playing up that Captain Universe aspect of it. That like one day, you know, a ring could fall from the sky and it be you, because it's a people are chosen. You know, rather than, you know, it's the everyman aspect. They're obviously trying to bring something more of an everyman-y Captain Universe sort of aspect into it. I would say not even into the film, but probably more into the promotion, because the film,
yeah.
If it's done right, will of course highlight the fact that it's born without fear, and
right.
It's not just anybody; it's somebody with very specific and special attributes. But
right,
I think that's a solid marketing approach to take.
Yeah, hey, they should do Captain Universe. That would be an exciting.
Yeah, it would.
You know, if it'll get me like a really tasty hamburger at like Burger King.
Well, that is almost guaranteed, sir.
On it, but they'll just call it the Universe Burger, and they'll put some blue sesame seeds on the bun or something.
Yeah,
I'm all for
it. There you go, a blue bun. Oh, geez. Tasty.
The Dark Whopper.
And we're finally starting to get some images out of Walking Dead.
And I hate zombies.
Oh, he's back from the cancer first.
That is like the worst possible news story for you to arrive on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Jeez.
I like the images.
Mm.
Yeah.
I bought them all because they have the duck in them, but I still haven't read them because I don't like zombies.
It's like way more violent than I thought it'd be for a TV series,
especially for like a non-HBO or Showtime series.
Yeah.
Wait, what channel is showing Walking Dead?
AMC.
I don't know what that is.
The home of Overboard and like
the American Movie Classic. They were showing First Contact this morning.
Yeah. Oh, joy.
Movie classic. I remember
First Contact.
I do too, but it's, you know, it's not an American Movie Classic. I remember watching real true American Movie Classics on that channel.
Like Commando.
Yeah, that was cool. Commando.
Yeah. And now
they play Commando.
God.
Board pretty.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so.
Read a book. Come on, people.
So, well, these look pretty good then, but I think are we all in agreement that this should really just be in black and white?
Yeah, I think.
But of course, we don't really know because these are just—they're not set photos, but they're promotional images. So it doesn't rule, and some of them are definitely very desaturated.
So the thing is, if we really want to watch it in black and white, we have the option.
Yeah, we can just turn the color down.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that doesn't have quite the same charm, though, when they actually make it look like something old. It doesn't look like old film stock.
Even if they just use it in a slightly desaturated color scheme. Basically, this big picture they're leading with of this woman zombie here. I'd watch it if it, you know, that's quite desaturated. Even, you know, obviously her skin is, but the reds are all very pale as well, I think. But,
the channel to American Movie Classics to watch a violent zombie.
Yeah, Interstatement raises a question. Is Walking Dead in black and white because it's trying to evoke the whole Night of the Living Dead thing, or is it just because it costs less? I always assume because it costs less.
Well, he actually said that he wanted to invoke the kind of universal monster feel of it. Is what he was
still
going
a three
for.
Buck comic, so
yeah, it's still a $3 comic, but he kind of wanted that kind of universal monster kind of classic feel to it, and that's why he was going for the whole black and white look.
Yeah, I think by and large, black and white isn't actually any cheaper unless it's two tone, you know.
Yeah,
but this is all grayscale and so and tone.
Now,
so
if they went black and white with the TV series, do you think they could get away with even more because there'd be no red blood in it and everything? Maybe the censors would let them do even more with the series?
Yeah, they might be able to pull it off. Especially, censors are really forgiving about violence. It's ridiculous how, you know.
Well, Walking Dead isn't that heavy on the visual violence. You know?
Sometimes. Well, not a whole lot.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, sometimes it has stories where it goes off the freaking wall,
but
there's just the occasional zombie attack, and it's only ever usually zombies. I mean, yes, okay, the thing about The Walking Dead is you never know who could be next, but usually it's just a few zombies lose a few limbs and everybody goes home, you know.
The book is mostly about bad things happening now.
Well, yeah, only crap. The Walking Dead isn't about the zombies, you know. I think that's kind of why it's odd that it's like, hey, look, zombies, and it's like, yeah, I don't care. Show me the people.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead isn't about the zombies. The Walking Dead is about the people. And I'm really looking forward to the show, honestly. I'm definitely going to give it a look. I hope it takes off. I hope the American public is able to understand that it's about the people and not the zombies.
I have a friend who wrote it as a play, like a one-act play, that was from the zombies' perspective. And it is just all moaning. Pretty much, like, apart from some people outside, you know, who they're attacking. And, yeah, no, that was hysterical. Because it is just like the sympathetic zombies. You know, so like someone will chase a human into the other room, and then the human will come back in who's just turned into a zombie and look at the other zombie accusingly and be like, you know.
Oh, well, that is the kind of zombie Walking Dead has as well. It's not none of your stupid modern fast running climbing zombies.
Yep.
What do they call those? It's all terms for those.
A Zack Snyder zombie?
I don't know. There's a term for it. I can't remember what it is.
Trying to keep them falling asleep during Resident Evil 5 zombie?
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
It's so winded, but you know.
So,
Ender showed up just in time for comic books. Excellent. Who wants to go first this week?
I can.
And we'll go with the Brian. Excellent.
I have a tendency to, if I don't know a book, if I've never read it before, I have a tendency not to look at the cover. And it happened last week with Secret Avengers number 1. I read it, thought it was crap, and turns out that it was the bane of my existence at Brubaker. Well, it happened again. I read a comic and ended up liking it a lot, and I checked the cover, and it was Brian Michael Bendis, and I feel dirty. But the thing, the book was really good. It was Avengers Prime
mm-hmm.
1. It was really engaging. The dialogue was in character. I mean, if these characters that we've known and loved for years were in the situation that they are in presently, they would be saying the things that they're saying instead of, you know, snappy, witty dialogue that, you know, Bendis writes just to hear because he has an ego. So it was really good. And the art was, of course, amazing. Who was the artist again?
Alan Davis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just overjoyed to see Alan Davis on a monthly book again, never mind an Avengers book again.
It's a miniseries.
I don't know where Alan Davis has been.
But no, the book was great. It's an interesting premise. The Rainbow Bridge is damaged. They all get thrown into one of the nine... I don't know if it's the same dimension, but it's one of the nine realms, and they basically have to find their way out. As McFeely pointed out at the beginning of the before the show, the whole book is basically to try to resolve the tension between Iron Man and Captain America or Captain Rogers, and
Thor a little bit,
Thor somewhat,
not so much in this issue though.
But it's really good. The dialogue is really. Really, in, it's really a character, and that's what surprises me about Bendis, because he's not a characterization person. He really typically writes to, he's always struck me as someone who writes to hear their own, you know, their own words. To kind of come up with a somewhat novel situation, and then protract it out across five or six issues.
But. Yeah, it's kind of surprising that he's writing this this comic that you really enjoy. And he's been writing, like, New Avengers and whatnot for, God, how many years now? You'd think he'd be burnt out on the Avengers by now.
Yeah, I've never really read a Bendis Avengers issue. Admittedly, I stopped after about a year and a half. But I've never really read one that I liked prior to this. It's kind of amazing.
I read this one, too.
It's just the golden touch of Alan Davis.
Must be.
This is actually, didn't mention it there. I mentioned it before the show, didn't mention it. This for any listeners who haven't read it, this essentially takes place immediately after the wrap-up of the final battle at the end of Siege, but before the final couple of pages of Siege and before the assorted New Avengers titles have all kicked off. So this is, they're trying to sort of get the cleanup in the wake of the fall of Asgard going, and when they enter the ruins... Cap, Iron Man, and Thor are sucked up by the damaged Rainbow Bridge and deposited possibly scattered throughout the nine worlds, possibly all dropped on the same world.
Yeah. I like it too because it puts each of them in their own situation, at least after the split, and you each get little good little character bits out of them, especially like for Tony, you know, trying to remember how he designed a piece of armor that's like 10 designs old and figuring out how to fix it. And it leaves them all at a bit of peril or something. Well, I guess except for Cap, who just sort of kicks an entire room full of ass.
Yes.
That's what he does.
Because that's what he does.
My favorite part was just when they're having the beginnings of their little argument, and Iron Man and Cap are essentially going, "You're a dick. No, you're a dick. Oh yeah, you're a dick. No, you're a dick." And Thor's just like, "Freaking humans!
Yeah,
freaking humans!"
Well, what's even great about that the entire exchange is really part of it is Tony is having to defend again. Tony's defending himself against something he doesn't remember that he did, which is what's really cool.
I thought it was great, too, because he was, like, still yelling in the same tone. He's like, "Oh, yeah, well, that's because you did this." And Tony's still like, "I did that? I did that? Wait, I did,
I did, what? Like, no, I didn't. Well, if I did it for a good reason."
he's still yelling at Steve as if Steve had done the thing he did because Steve told him he did it.
Right.
You know?
I don't know that they're playing at all with the idea that Tony doesn't remember it in this. I mean, if you don't know that, I don't know that this comic puts that across at all. But if you do know it from reading, we know that from.
No, I mean, like, why would you forget that? I mean, seems like, you know, that's not a casual slip.
Are you talking about the bit where he says, "I did what? I lessened?"
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's supposed to be him forgetting. I think that's him just completely dumbfounded by Cap saying such a stupid thing. Or, you know, or by it from his point of view.
But he did that, and he has memory problems.
Well, no, but I mean, that's Tony didn't. Tony didn't give him the keys to his armory. Tony had the whole vault locked up.
No, I think he was saying he did that by putting it in other people's hands and then leaving, essentially. I don't think he was saying.
It's like Tony says right here.
He's saying you made it possible for this to happen by not being careful.
I think Tony is taking issue with the line. There's two ways of interpreting it. Is like, if we think Bendis really is paying enough attention to the other comics to realize that Stark doesn't remember that, which I have my doubts about.
No, that's certainly part possible. Of the whole heroic age thrust is that he doesn't remember a lot of that because they want him to be a more approachable character, and they spent like 5 years making him an ass, and now he's like their new flagship, and he has to be approachable. They're wiping his hands of it.
You know, I really hate that every time that they do something to make Iron Man be an ass, which they've done many, many times over the years, they always do some bullcrap thing to kind of bring him back to Earth. You know, like the crappy stuff where, like, he was a villain back in the 90s or something, and, like, his younger, you know, past self has to stop him or something.
Yes.
All the stupid crap they've done over the years.
Yeah, that does happen to him a lot.
That's the thing about Iron Man is that Iron Man is a bit of a dick.
And, no matter what way you look at it,
make him marketable. You kind of have to backpedal on that a little bit.
I kind of think there should be like a sort of subtextual understanding in all of comicdom that any event that happened in the comics more than 10 years ago has been largely removed from continuity. Just like there's the origin and like the last 10 years, and all you can really count on. And the origin can change if they tell you it does. You know, I mean,
yeah, really.
That's basically what they're doing now, aren't they?
Think it's pointless to complain about that, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, it should just comics have been going long enough and have had this problem long enough that we should understand that the only way to, you know, fix it. I mean, like, these people should all be 87 years old. You know, Bucky should be 1,000. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They've got all sorts of, you know, we're like, the third Xavier clone. He only has half the brain. Magneto's 20 again. I mean, it's just like,
yeah, you know, fair enough.
Why worry about it? We want those people to be there. It's like if we had all of our continuity issues straightened out past 10 years, there, you know, what I mean, like there would be no comic. I think it's, you know, I mean, like there would be no one left to be in these things. We'd be on, like, you know, their kids or something. And I think that recent events, and I think 10 years is pretty far back even, but I think, you know, I think that's a good thing. Like, I should be able to keep a coherent stream of thought for, you know, that many issues, but I don't know. I'm fairly light on continuity.
Yeah, I'm a continuity nerd personally, but I accept
I
that
like
that is
knowing
the way
it, but I don't like hold it against them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I only hold it against them if it's something really stupid. Like, something I've held against them a lot recently. When continuity is used as a weapon, almost. Whenever someone dredges up something that a character is well known for from the past, ignoring the fact that it's been worked through and dealt with. I really hated when Chuck Austin brought back up the fact that Hank Pym hit the Wasp one time. And then basically ever, even though a large portion of Kurt Busiek's run was dedicated to them working through their problems and renewing their relationship, he dredged it right back up. And ever since then, for the last 6-7 years, that's been Hank Pym's thing. And that really annoyed me. It was a massive backslide. Yeah. Chuck Austin, well, I don't know if it's Chuck Austin's fault or if Brandis was already planning to do it, but it seems to me that Austin put it back in everybody's minds, and when Bendis followed him up on the Avengers, it was like, oh yeah, let's wring that friggin' dry for 6 more years. But Dan Slott
was really upset when they kind of like brought back the Jean Grey Wolverine romance thing under Morrison when that came back up. But they've like so gotten over that in the book. Mm. I mean, just like I felt like that was very. That was done to the point where I feel like if Jean Grey had come into Logan's room naked, he would have been like, that'd be a really crappy thing of me to do to Cyclops. I'm sorry. I don't mind looking at your butt while you walk down the hallway, but I really don't want to get blown into the stratosphere. And as much as I hate him, I think he probably is my best friend.
Right.
Not a good idea anymore.
It's not that okay. I mean, that's something that's been well and true. I mean, then, again, Morrison probably kind of brought that back off the back of the movie. But,
well, I think that was part. Everything about that annoyed me. That particular relaunch, I was kind of like, yeah.
So Brian, anything else, or that was?
I read a few things, but nothing really from the last week.
Okay.
Brightest Day was that?
Oh yeah, we'll get to Brightest Day. Triplet. Or did you only read Brightest Day?
I read Brightest Day, and I read Legion of Superheroes #1, which I think is maybe 2 weeks old at this point.
Oh, let's go ahead and get Brightest Day out of the way.
I'm gonna go get a sandwich or something. So go ahead.
Yeah. go ahead with Brightest Day, Triplett, and let's get that out of the way.
So, Brightest Day #3. Talking to you guys before, kind of sounded like you guys didn't care too much for this book.
I did not.
Nope.
No.
Would we like to elaborate why you guys did not like the book?
Because not a goddamn thing is happening.
And what's in its place is making me want to puke.
It's like, hey, this is, you know, this is 26 issues. Probably 60% of the people buying this issue will buy issue 26. So we can do whatever we want and we make money.
Yeah.
DC's Brightest Day. Let's see if they'll buy this crap.
Yeah, it's
tagline.
I think the problem is that, I mean, and it was there in 52 also, is that when you know that you've got a certain length, a very lengthy story to do, and you know what you want to hit, and you know that you've got to somehow stretch this out, I think that's the problem.
Then don't do that.
But you don't have to stretch it out. They're making the choice to do that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying I see what the problem is. I see why there's an issue with them just getting anywhere. Because, like, you know, like I was saying before, you know, the only part that I really liked about this issue, other than the art is fantastic, I'll say that that's the driving focus of this issue for me, is basically the orca trying to chomp off of Aquaman's head. That was kind of awesome.
My favorite part.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Aquaman parts of this book so far have been some of the most interesting.
But even there, I mean, we've had 3 issues where Aquaman is still talking to dead sea animals.
Yeah.
And
well, Aquaman
while that's
only
awesome,
that you've paid, like,
there's So it's, I mean, and if you have 12 issues of that, why do, and you don't have enough content, why not do six and you can do one issue like every other month or something?
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of these people forget. I think it, sometimes I feel like the comic companies themselves forget, like, you make these choices. There is no real causality. You can make this work however you want. And if you're sitting there going like, well, we want to have 12 issues and we want to tell this story, but if we do that story on this timeline, we're going to have, I don't know, you know, at least four of these books completely suck. And it's just like, then don't do that.
You know, that's the answer.
The answer isn't like, well, I guess we just have to have a few lamers in there. It's like, no, just don't do it. You know why? Because we're the ones who have to pay for these things. And when you do one that you're just like, oh, well, we need a fill issue here, we still pay, you know, $3.99 or whatever for that fill issue. And that's, you know, that's all we're going to read of your stuff for a month. And then we got to sit there on it. Well, I don't understand that logic at all. We're like, oh, we're trying to tell a longer story. So what we're going to do is release like 70 issues that suck, which hopefully will read okay as a trade when they climax. I mean, this isn't a book. If your story's too long and you can't tell it in exciting installments, then don't tell it in a serialized medium. You can't tell those stories. Those are books. You can have, you know, six acts that suck in a play so you can get to the climax if that's what you need to do, because it's just one contained experience. But if you're going to try and, you know, drop a turd in the comic store every month and think we're going to be happy when you finally get around to publishing a good comic, you know, get real.
I
didn't think this issue was that bad.
Yeah, I didn't hate it.
I mean, I think there's plenty of forward motion in the stories in this issue. I mean, you know, we get the implication that the resurrected Black Lanterns haven't come back fully because they have to prove that they're worthy of life again in the Dead Man story. Ronnie and Jason are separated again in the Firestorm story, and it seems that Ronnie actually does remember his experiences as the Black Lantern Firestorm.
Yeah.
Not much happens in the Aquaman story, admittedly, except for the fact that they establish we can't go back to Mera's dimension. Martian Manhunter gets well and truly on the trail of the monster in his story.
What did he see?
And Hawkman and Hawkgirl find out what Hathset was up to in their story. I don't think you could possibly argue that this didn't move the story.
I'm still yelling about the last one. I didn't read this one. The last one was so bad.
I figured.
What did Martian Manhunter see when he psychically scanned the dog? What was it exactly? The art was kind of nondescript.
It's just that monster dismembering.
You basically saw what we saw last issue, ripping
the skin off of the meat.
It looked like
he basically got to see what we saw last issue, since he didn't get to witness
it in a black and white dog perspective.
Yeah,
because you see the bodies that are just sort of skinless.
Because all he knew is that something had come through before him. He didn't know that it had murdered a whole family of people. He's just catching up with what we already knew in the last issue.
I'm still going with White Martian.
It could be.
That would make sense. Real.
And we didn't see what this. And also, there's something else going on with the White Lantern as well. Some kind of voice. Under the ocean or something, saying we're free.
You know,
so I'm curious what's happening there.
And then blowing up a plane.
It probably is a white Martian with Batman gone. There's nothing for them to be afraid of at this point. So it's probably a white Martian.
So, like, on that page when the White Lantern started reacting and it looks like it blows up that plane, why did it blow up a plane?
I don't know if it's supposed to be deliberately blowing up a plane or if that's just a rather unfortunate plane that happened to be flying by. It's whatever this was erupted. I mean, I wondered if it was supposed to be some kind of reference to Mera's dimension. They're talking about an underwater dimension.
Is it maybe there for size context?
I don't know,
because you don't get a very good context out of it. So.
No, it's like a really tiny panel, and then boom, you're done. Move on.
That could be a really big blast of energy, or that plane could just be really far away.
So what's going on with the Hawks' bodies and this thing on the last page here? What is up with this?
It turns out on the last page that Hathset has merged the bones of all of Hawkman and Hawkgirl's past incarnations together to create some sort of gateway.
Whether or not that's
tied into this thing beneath the sea.
We get the thing that says next Hawk World. Well, what's up with that?
Yeah. Well, and we know that they're tied to the Violet lanterns.
Yeah, because, well, the thing is bursting with violet energy as well.
Yeah. Well, and isn't it like a version of them that made up their power battery?
Something like that. I haven't read those issues, but...
Yeah, you're right. I remember that. Their bodies or something were there, right? They're like a version of their...
The bodies of, like, the great timeless lovers or something, or, like, yeah, the fire battery. And,
yeah, like, not just them, but, like, others as well. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Sure. See? I know, hey.
You know that there was a Star Sapphire embedded in that gauntlet that's been leading them around for the last couple of issues as well. So, yeah, frankly, I mean, I don't know. I still don't care about Firestorm. I'm on Ronnie's side, frankly.
Ronnie just wants to party, and you're all for that.
Well, not so much that. It's more like, you know, Jason, it's not his fault. Stop being such a fucking douche.
Yeah, he is kind of being a dick, really. It's like, I understand your girlfriend died, but, you know, please.
Yeah, tragedy and all that, but, like,
yeah.
Didn't do it. I'm blaming it.
I understand that it felt like it was your hand that was turning your girlfriend to salt, but it wasn't, and it's not your fault, and it's not his fault. Get over it.
Although, mind you, kind of a horrible, more interesting dimension to it with the idea that Ronnie might actually remember all of that, so they may be able to take that super interesting. Just as long as this doesn't lead to Ronnie and Professor Stein fusing into Firestorm again.
That would be more awesome. And then just Jason goes away.
Well, I don't have any attachment to Firestorm one way or the other, so that would just purely be backpedaling to a Silver Age incarnation of a character for, well, it wouldn't even be Silver Age, but a classic incarnation of a character for no other reason than to do it whenever the character was functioning just fine. Alrighty, thank you, Ryan Choi.
Oh,
man. Just when I think I hold grudges, there's McFeely.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even have an attachment to Ryan Choi. That's the thing. It's just the principle of the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that, yeah. I did go back and read that. Oh, my God. It was
Comic book stuff.
The description that you gave was definitely on spot on. It was just, God.
Yeah.
Horrible. So, okay, that's Triplet then, I guess. Ender, what did you read this week?
I actually read a whole bunch of stuff because I was way behind. My problem is going to be I don't know what's from this week and what's from the weeks before because I was like 2-3 weeks behind. I snagged a whole bunch of the Heroic Age stuff and the Avengers, and I enjoyed most of that for the most part. Secret Avengers was a little, I don't know where it's going. I got so much this week, I haven't read it all yet. I read all the X-Men stuff I've gotten. I'm still enjoying all the Second Coming stuff very much. I think there is a little bit of, you know, they really resurrected a whole roster of villains. But I really kind of like, I'm enjoying it. I think, like, conceptually, I'm like, wow, that's kind of cheesy. But in terms of the actual comics, it's, like, great to see them fighting people again that, you know, there's this emotional context with. They're just running with it. So I'm kind of all for it. It's one of those things where just like, I thought you were dead. Nope, I'm okay. All right, then, you know, let's move on with the comic. You know. I finally saw Nightcrawler actually die. Which book was that in? Is that an X-Force?
Hard to say.
I think they're all just merging together because they have every team in them. I'm like trying to remember. Like I remember the context of the story, but I couldn't tell you like which thing happened where. I did. Nobody I finally read Siege 4, even though I'd already read Siege Aftermath, and that just pretty much came down to it's a demigod. Quick, hit it with something. Clunk. Okay. what was the? I don't know. I didn't see much point to that. Again, the better way to get rid of the Sentry, I'm sorry, Bob, would have been to just not write him anymore and spare us all that. Well, that's all you got.
Definitely
do.
A more interesting metatextual way of getting rid of the Sentry, but whatever it was, they didn't find it.
Yeah, I don't care. I think they should just have him like, man, I don't want to. Just do what they did when they didn't want him to participate in a story because he'd spoil it. Just be like, man, I'm not feeling so good this weekend. I'm going to like go back to my house and have a few beers. And then just don't write him again. Every once in a while, somebody could be like, what about the Sentry? And be like, man, don't even ask about him.
Yeah, he's not.
You don't even have to say. Yeah.
just
God, man, God's drunk again out in Nevada. Just forget it. You know, it was X-Force 5 that Nightcrawler bought it in, incidentally. What else did I... Also, I was very surprised to discover... I didn't even know this was coming out, and I really think I should have. The Best of Optimus Prime trade paperback came out from IDW.
Really?
And it, yeah, and it doesn't just have IDW stuff in it. It's a bunch of Prime stories. And what they were really going for was to try and cover different eras. So they have, like, they have an old UK story, and they have an old Marvel story, and they have part of the animated movie adaptation.
My God, that's terrible.
That's, well, that's just him. Well, they have his Megatron fight in it, so.
I suppose they've got it in there to represent that, but that comic is in no way deserving of being in any kind of collection.
But it is a great Prime moment that is only captured in comics, you know, in that way,
really.
They didn't
have the one where he kills himself over a video game in it, did they?
No, thankfully not. I was just waiting for that, but no, they didn't. They had Spotlight Optimus Prime in there, and they had a good bit from Stormbringer, which when reading, it's like, wow, Stormbringer's better than I remembered.
But, just to say, there should probably be a few more Marvel comics in there.
Well, I think they just have one from every. I mean, like one of the UK is a Marvel, I think, from way back.
Yeah.
You know, and it's full of Simon Furman.
What do they got in there? Prey or something?
Basically, I think the whole thing is Simon Furman and Buddy Yansky.
Mm. Well, that's Transformers comics, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're gonna pull a random sampling, then it's probably
until about 2 years ago.
Yeah. But it's a good. It's a good little pickup if you're a Prime fan, I think, especially if you're not caught up on all those things. You might see some stuff you hadn't seen before. So,
yeah.
I guess that's about it. I read some Deadpool. I always enjoy Deadpool.
I think I've gotten
out of it. I like what they're
doing
with Deadpool for the heroic age.
I'm going to have to get back into it because there were so many there for a little bit. It's just like, I can't handle it. And
there's still a lot.
Like, stopped.
I can't even, I'm a little, I get them. I love reading Deadpool. I do really enjoy it, but it is so prolific right now that sometimes I'm a little OD'd on it. So it's not as compelling as it used to be when I used to, you know, be looking for just like, yes, Deadpool came out this week. Awesome. It'd be like the one, you know, Deadpool you'd see. I mean, like, one of the things I haven't read that I'm getting around to is, you know, I picked up Doom War, and what's on the cover of it? Deadpool wearing Dr. Doom's mask and hood.
Oh, my God.
You know? He is truly everywhere.
Yeah.
It's diluting the experience.
Waiting to see if
Deadpool
actually does kick Dr. Doom's ass. That would be a lot of fun. The Hulkpool thing still is just hysterical. They have him, like, completely ruin history in some other dimension. He, like, prevents every hero from being, you know, every origin. He's just, like, he saves Daredevil from getting hit by the truck. He swats the radioactive spider. He knocks the Fantastic Four out of orbit. He saves Bucky and Captain America from the missile problem.
Oh, God.
Just, like, the whole bit. And then, like, you know, when he's leaving Captain America and Bucky, they're, you know, it's like, you know, Bucky says, probably for the best. I don't think he'd have assimilated well anyway. And Captain America says, well, you know, don't underestimate the melting pot, Bucky. You know, don't forget our first president was a deformed pirate who decided to take on the British Empire. And there's Ben Grimm dressed up as Blackbeard in place of the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, my God.
That was what he screwed up in the last issue.
Oh, God.
So.
Okay, awesome. All right, so McFeely, what you got for us?
What do I got this week? The Torch miniseries ended this week, and you'll probably recall I haven't been speaking hugely favorably of this in past shows, if I've been bothering to speak of it at all. It's one of those unfortunate scenarios. You guys know the feeling, I'm sure, whenever a miniseries finally comes to an end, and you're like, yes, that's one less book I have to buy this month. Thank for that.
I like that, actually.
I don't like that feeling. I hate having that feeling. I enjoy comics too much to enjoy that feeling, you know?
Well, when it's a book that I bought and I enjoyed the beginning and then, like, I kind of got lost with it maybe two or three issues in and then I'm ready for it to be done, yeah, I kind of like that feeling.
Yeah, but in many regards, it's like, yeah, that's better over. But the problem with this one, I think, was just it went to 8 issues. It was just too long. But it finished very strongly. It's actually a pretty darn good final issue. I mean, the plot completely swerved away from where it was at the start, which involved the mad thinker studying the Human Torch's body to master the artificial cells from which he's created. And it is, you know, so that's where it concludes, on an AIM base in the ocean. It begins on an AIM base in the ocean with the mad thinker doing that, and it ends in a subterranean Nazi colony in South America where an evil dictator has used said cells to manufacture an entire civilization that worships him as a new Reich. And also there's an Inhuman Torch, who is the baddie, the final baddie for the series. The finger.
An Inhuman Torch?
Yes.
That's an awesome name.
Well, these...
All we need now is the Inhumanoid Torch.
Ooh.
Well, it is coming up from beneath the earth.
There you go.
This Nazi scientist, what's his name? Yeah, he's a scientist. He gets the... he's been trying... He stole Horton Sales back in the day. And as we all know, I'm sure, Horton cells combust whenever they come into contact with oxygen, which is why the Human Torch went on fire in the first place when he was created. That's why they're all live in this subterranean colony where they're not exposed to the air, properly filtered, chemically treated air to prevent that from happening. And this guy's been trying to create a weapon that he can send out that won't burn up and burn away when it's exposed to air. So he gets the thinker to give him the cells that he's taken from the Human Torch to create this weapon. And it turns out to be the Inhuman Torch, who's rather nice design as well. He's kind of like an inverse torch. He's burning on the inside while his outside is all blackened coal. And the issue is just a drawn-out slugfest between these characters as the Human Torch tries to find the humanity in the Inhuman Torch, who is just a weapon, and he tries to bring him around to tries to remember his own humanity. That's been the Torch's quest for this series. He's remembering his own humanity, and he's trying to. I think he sees something of himself in this thing, so he's trying to help it as well. Of course, in the end, it's got the power to suck the flame out of the Human Torch, and he flares up to Nova Heat at the moment he decides to, and carbonizes the thing. So he has to kill it to save it, as it were. It's a pretty strong finish, you know. But running through all of this, like, is where the Nazi scientist, whose name I don't even deign to remember, is taken captive by the mad thinker, who instructs him to take him to the escape hatch. And so he does. And just when the thinker is about to dispatch him, when they get away, it turns out that all the weapons from the underground colony were controlled by computer chips that prevent them from being turned upon him. So the thinker is immediately subdued when the weapon backfires after he tries to pop the guy. And outside they go. And the Nazi is monologuing away. It's all brilliant. I've won. So he's about to leave when the thinker turns to him and says... what is it he says? You say you come from a line of geniuses and that you are their equal, but neither of those things is true. And he quite calmly and carefully explains to this fellow that he's not actually the grandson of a genius scientist. His grandfather was sterile, and he built an android in the image of a grandson. And just as soon as the thinker finishes explaining that, the guy's Horton cells react with the oxygen and he goes up in flames. And the thinker walks off with two bags of gold, and everybody's happy.
There you go.
It's been a better Mad Thinker story than it has a Human Torch series, but it was a pleasantly strong finish for a miniseries that I felt lost its way and was overlong. I see there's an Invaders miniseries advertised for later this year from the same Dynamite-related creative team, but I think I'll be taking a pass on that one.
Oh, I'd forgotten. Ironhide 2 came out this week.
It certainly did.
And it was fantastic.
Oh, it was?
Not much happened in it, but it was strong.
Yeah, I disagree. I thought, I mean, like, within the context of what the story is, a lot happened in it. Because if you think about it, this story almost, this portion of it really just began. Because what we had all first issue pretty much was a setup flashback almost, which was an interesting story and was fun to read. And this one, I mean, this is the, this, it's not like we watched Ironhide walk around and Cybertron and realize where he was for all of last issue. It feels like a continuance, but it really, you know, it really is like this is the first time we're seeing him encounter this. And it's sort of like a suspense setup because it doesn't tell us a lot because we know what the deal is with Cybertron. What's interesting is that Ironhide is now encountering it, and we know he has no idea. And plus,
yeah, I mean the like, things were happening on the page, but things didn't move forward to any great degree until those last couple of pages.
There was nowhere to go but forward because there was all we had last issue was a cliffhanger in this place.
Well, I suppose Ironhide
himself, discovering where he was forward movement. Finding the swarm is forward movement, and then of course,
not forward movement.
Spoiler-wise, you know who he encounters is huge forward movement. And even his little flashbacky thing, which has never happened before, the fact that it happened.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
I think it's all subtle, but it's all within the context of the story. We don't learn what any of that really means at this point, but I certainly don't think it's accurate to say that nothing happened.
Well, not a heck of a lot happened. But
the story moved.
Not nothing either.
I thought the story.
And certainly, those last couple of pages have me very excited for the next issue.
Yeah.
If they are, you know, what I think they are.
Yeah. Well, we all feel that way. I think it's pretty clear at this point. It was subtle enough at the moment that I was like, "Is that? I'm not sure if that's." Then an hour or two later, it was like, "Oh my God, it's definitely." You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was looking at the little guy who came up to him, and I was like, "Is that?" I think it might be. So then when I turned the page, I was like, oh my God, it totally is.
The head mold is so accurate that if it's not, they're just being bastards. I mean, it's like, that's a cheat. If that's not what it is.
Yeah, that's
and
ridiculous.
And of course, a consistently gorgeous book as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's sad is it's Casey Collar, and he is not going to do interiors anymore after this. Apparently, he's like
retiring after this issue or this miniseries.
After this miniseries, he said he might still do covers from time to time, but he's.
Hey, what?
I don't know either. He said he didn't want to talk about it when I talked to him about it when I asked him.
He's got a better offer.
Well, I mean, he's not doing it anymore.
Sorry,
he's like not doing comic work. Like it's not just IDW.
Well, for a guy who got discovered basically by winning a pinup contest, you know, if he's got something, if he's got, well, you know, fair play to him. I mean, if he's got
of Transformers artists, he's definitely in your current ones. He's definitely in my top three.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I'm really sad to see him go.
And you know, as he's a Transformers artist who actually would have. A strong ability outside of the Transformers brand as well.
When was the last time he drew a person that I could look at to verify that would be my question. Not that I'm saying he couldn't, I'm not, you know, have we had evidence that that's
true?
You
know, you make a good point. I can't think, I don't know if he actually has.
Ways. I mean, we certainly have artists where that does not go both ways. I don't know what you mean. That's been great. That's been great, and it's of course it's funny because I'm so down on the ongoing these days, and it's still written. This is written by Mike Costa as well.
Huh. Well, anyway. Giant Size X-Men Forever was out this week as well. This is the bridging issue between volumes 1 and 2 of the series. It relaunches from at volume 2, number 1, next week. And this is essentially a story about... it's about many things, but it is essentially about the Shi'ar once again deciding that it's time for them to do something completely reprehensible because the plot demands it. And getting Professor Xavier out of the picture again.
I missed this. What was this?
Giant Size X-Men Forever.
You know, oh my God, I didn't even see that. I must not have had it there when I went to the store. I didn't even realize it came out.
Yeah, but you don't. You haven't been reading X-Men Forever, have you?
Oh, you're in Forever. I'm sorry. I'm not even saying. I'm sorry. I missed
Forever.
I heard like Giant Sized X-Men. I was like, what? No, that's probably
the,
what I said.
The Claremont right. Returns to the Past.
She just didn't call that by the title I understand it by, which is the, you know, of course, X-Men Chris Claremont does whatever the hell he wants.
Mm, yes, that is, well, that is exactly what it is, but I'm pretty sure he told this story before. And this is about the Shi'ar coming and saying, right, we're having Xavier away with us. Get along fine without him.
We want Baldy!
Well, basically, I mean, it's quite cleverly tied in with old stuff. Basically, if you can cast your mind back to when Professor Xavier was living in the Shi'ar galaxy back in the 1989, 1990, it turned out that when he was there and had access to all the Shi'ar's data net, he had accidentally left a small pathway open in his studies, which allowed the Skrulls to slip in and permitted the Skrulls to conquer the Shi'ar Empire, as they did in Jim Lee's run back in 90, I think. And so the Shi'ar have found this out, and they've come to Earth and have said he's got to pay for what he did. And they've taken him off with them. And that's basically the thrust of the story.
So basically the Shi'ar have crossed the galaxy to arrest someone who was once their friend because he didn't return a library book or the equivalent.
Essentially, he cocked up, and the crime may have been unwitting, but lives were lost because of it and must be answered for. Sure, you know what the Shi'ar are like. They are remarkably unmoving, rigid, unforgiving bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Lilandro will make sure it all gets
well.
Apparently
nonsensical.
Oh, totally. Well, that's it. It's the same as the Dark Phoenix saga, for goodness sake, you know? It's not Jean's fault that she killed all them people, but it happened because of her, so we got it.
Well, that at least made some sense. I don't know. Man, those feathers go right through to the brain, don't they?
Hmm?
Sure, they're feathered.
It's one of those stories where the Shi'ar do something, they request something. Oh, I can't think of the word. They want something stupid, and they have to be mitigated. But there's also a backup strip in here as well, in which a new figure, who is unrevealed, takes over the consortium and seems to set the story up for Volume 2 of X-Men Forever, sets the Avengers on the X-Men. So we're going to have a bit of 1990s Avengers action. The old White Vision and the Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman and Thor with a beard.
Oh, good.
Leading into that.
Catches the mead. Hmm? Thor with a beard, because it catches the mead.
Thor with a beard is good Thor. You can tell if Thor's going to be on good because he's wearing a beard. And also this week, I picked up the last thing I got this week was Heralds, which is a new miniseries from Marvel that's coming out weekly this month because it's the 5-week month. So they're padding a little with this this miniseries. It's called Heralds. I picked it up purely because it's by Catherine Immonen, whose work I have. For every 5 comics Catherine Immonen writes, 4 of them are genuinely really good, and then one of them is this rather imperceptible mass of jargon. And there are 5 issues in this series, so we'll see which issue of the 5 that is. But it's not this first one, where something's coming from space, and Cyclops takes Emma Frost to Las Vegas to throw her a birthday party. But because Emma has demanded that there be no fuss, no presents, no parties, and nobody that she knows, Cyclops has followed all of those commands and put together a little get-together with Patsy Walker, She-Hulk, Valkyrie, Agent Brand, and Monica Rambeau. And they're partying in Las Vegas while some immense cosmic thing is coming down from the sky. And running alongside this is a plot with a waitress in a diner who is named Frances throughout the story. But whenever this cosmic thing comes crashing down, breaks open a sword containment facility and unleashes dinosaurs and clones of Einstein on the unsuspecting Las Vegas public, Frances drives off into the desert in a maddened rush and meets who she believes to be her father, who addresses her as Frankie, at which point it twigged, I think we're looking at something Galactus-related here.
Hmm.
Because the title is Heralds.
Yeah, of course. Well, there you go.
was no Herald of Galactus. Though I think she's supposed to be dead, so this may be following up on that. And of course, the series is also part of this Women of Marvel promotion that Marvel have been running this year, their various one-shots, because it's about an entirely female cast. Which, I don't know, seems to motivate me to pick it up. I'm interested in books with female creative teams and female stars at the minute. I mean, there's this other Marvel... Marvel Adventures, or the Marvel Younger Readers line, book with a similar premise, which is just that it's all about female heroes, but it goes by the absolutely dreadful title of Heroes, but with a hyphen between the R and the O. So it's Heroes.
Heroes.
So I'm rather glad that this book isn't called Hurls, you know, as if George Bush had titled it or something. Hurls.
America.
You know, listening to the description of that book, one of the things that really struck me is I'm really enjoying in all those X-Men books is the sort of diabolically pragmatic Cyclops. And I want to see like some kind of DC Marvel crossover where somebody kind of introduces Tony Stark to Bruce Wayne and is like, hey, this is kind of your equivalent here, you know, rich guy who kind of makes his own superhero-ness out of, you know, being rich and really brilliant. And they're like, oh, hi. And they stand there for a minute kind of awkwardly, and Stark tries to talk to him for a second. Bruce Wayne's just staring at him. And finally, Tony Stark goes, you know what? I know who you need to talk to. It just takes him over to Cyclops. You two. You two can just hang out and plot over here all day, all right? I'm going to go find somebody cuter to talk to.
That's been something that's been creeping into Cyclops for a while now. I think Emma Frost's a bad influence on him.
Well, she's a great influence on him, but she's
a good bad influence
anymore. I mean, I remember actually enjoying these because they were well written and fit the character of the time when Cyclops could not say the word Charles. He could not speak to Xavier in anything but a reverential tone. And now, when like you know, Xavier's losing his crap because Magneto's come there and hang out, you know, Cyclops just like, shut up, Chuck. Seriously. That's enough, Baldy. You know, it's like, yeah.
But you know that whenever they fix the mutant situation, and whenever mutants get their powers back, which it will happen eventually, whenever they finally undo M Day, that's probably going to go out the window along with it as the X Men return to a more noticeable status quo.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe. Enjoy it while you got it. Is basically what I'm saying.
Well,
tell you what I'm not enjoying because I have those comics up in my hand here. I'm really not enjoying these little Iron Man extremist motion comic cardboard adverts that they've stapled into the Marvel comics this week.
I've actually been meaning to watch that motion.
Yes, I want to watch it too. So the advert's done its job, but that doesn't stop me from tearing the fuck out of the comic.
Oh, gosh.
Same thing, Chris. Throwing it across the room is not necessarily animated.
Motion. It's a motion.
It's in motion now.
Yeah, that's not the... Right. Not the same. Not the... No. Okay.
Well, that's everything I read this week anyway.
Okay. Was Bruce Wayne 2... you know,
last
Return
week.
Of Bruce last Wayne, week. Was that last week? The second one was? Okay.
Yeah, you missed out.
I missed it. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I thought it was all right. I like the first one more, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the first one more, too, but...
Yeah.
I think we generally...
Hey, it's Pirates next week.
I'm upset with DC over how much I disliked Brightest Day that I've read, but I am still trying to catch up on my Batman. I've decided I may develop interest in that. I enjoy Damian, the Robin they have going now. I enjoy that whole idea. I another crossover I'd like to see. I really want to see Bucky and like Dick Grayson sitting outside at the same therapist's office.
That's the real crossovers that we need, right? That's
right.
These are what we need out of crossovers, not like team ups.
You just need the one panel. You need like Dick Grayson in the Batman costume and Bucky in the Captain America and just one leaning over saying, so what are you here for? You know?
And so that's how I became Captain America. And so what are you here for? Yeah. Well, you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
So I will close out with a more grandiose story going on in the Marvel Universe, the Thanos Imperative. which, hey, remember when comics were epic and expansive and involved storylines that nobody cared about? Well, here's another one. No, not really. This could be good stuff. So basically, as far as I can tell, I'm trying to go back and pick up. So you have the Thanos Imperative, which is basically, so far, what I can tell is there is a rift somewhere way the hell out in space that is a tear through from another universe known as the Cancerverse, you know, because that's what you would call it. Essentially, in that universe, it's basically a parallel universe to the Marvel universe that we know, except that they have defeated Death there. So, of which, in the lead-in, it's kind of funny because you have Nova and Star-Lord sitting around talking about the nature of war and themselves, and Star-Lord makes the comment that, well, until the Celestials get involved, you know, you're pretty much okay, but once that happens, then you're probably screwed. And guess what? The Celestials are totally going to get involved in the war that's going on in this particular set of stories, because the Cancerverse is trying to break into our universe because, hey, there's no Death, so everything there lives, and they need more room. And they want our room. And so we're going to give them something they don't have, which is Thanos. Because that makes sense.
Right.
Sort of does. I mean, you know, Avatar of Death and the whole thing. So, and there's like, you know, and of course it's going to be awesome because Silver Surfer is in it for a panel. but there's some novel stuff here. You have the Cancerverse group of hero-ish people known as the Revengers.
I see what they did there.
Yeah, see what the
Revengers. You know, they put the R and E in the front of wow.
Yeah, and it looks like it's the Cancerverse version of Thor and Miss Marvel and Captain.
That must have taken them like 45 minutes to think up.
And oh yeah, it's good stuff. You got Mar-Vell from the Cancerverse on here, and they're all sitting around talking about how awesome it is that they're, you know. And of course, you can tell they're sort of evil because they all have like these pentagrams on them.
That's subtle. So,
yeah, you know. So anyway, so then they, yeah. So basically, it's all about trying to team up with Thanos to send him over to the Cancerverse to try to, I don't know, resurrect Death or something so that they can actually kill these things.
Wow. But
as soon as they get over there, they meet up with the Cancerverse version of the Defenders. Yes.
And what's their clever name?
I don't know. Defenders
still
of
just the Defenders.
The Defenders of the Realm. So
maybe they're the Benders. I don't know.
There's Hulk, and there's...
nobody cares enough to make up a funny name for them.
Yeah, cares about the Defenders. Seriously.
Mariner.
Go home, Doctor Strange. You don't get to have a team.
Yeah, that's Doctor Strange. Very evil-ish looking version of Doctor Strange. So, anyway, so this could be exciting.
He looks so benign, normally.
Yeah. Yeah, he has like big swooping like horn cape thing. I don't know. It's kind of crazy looking.
It's like, hey, before I believe you're a good guy, would you mind taking Satan's cape off? Would that be okay? Because I'm just having a little trouble with it. Whenever I hear a Thanos these days, my favorite interaction of Deadpool with the larger Marvel Universe back in the day was that they had his origin be related to Death being in love with him. And it sort of created this situation where all these giant storylines that come out of Thanos are ostensibly because he is trying to impress Death because he is in love with Death. And it sort of implied that, yes, all these horrible things are happening because she's actually in love with Deadpool. And Deadpool unknowingly is like causing intergalactic war everywhere and destroying bits of the universe.
I think that's still the story here, though. I think that's still what this is, because, I mean, essentially Thanos can't die, and he still loves Death, and Death...
Where is Thanos being?
I think they should go through this whole epic series, and, like, it should be, like, Thanos has to, like... Or they should be like, you know, someone who loves death has to, like, kiss her or something, like, do the Sleeping Beauty stupid thing, and have, like, Thanos try, and just, like, out of nowhere, Deadpool just come up, like, they brought me over. Out of the way, chin boy. You know?
Maybe that's
play
where
with
this
that a little more.
The Deadpool team-up thing is going to end up. Yeah. Deadpool, yeah, thing will go. That'll be exciting.
Yeah, they got to get there.
That would
they
totally
have
throw
one
a twist.
Actual interaction between Thanos and Deadpool. He, Thanos did hire someone to kill Deadpool unsuccessfully at some point.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's, yeah, here you have two characters that really have a hard time dying.
Well, that was the whole joke of that Deadpool was he was trying really hard to die. Like, just couldn't pull it off.
No.
But that was, like, one of the most horrible, serious, and depressing Deadpool comics they did, is that annual.
Oh, that whole run, though, is so good.
Oh, absolutely.
Joke I think that's one of my favorite sets of comics ever.
And Marvel know it, too, because it's like when they started doing those Deadpool classic trade paperbacks, the first volume reprinted all of, like, Deadpool's first appearances and his early miniseries and the first issue of the Joe Kelly series, just so people couldn't start buying it from the second volume with the first issue. You know, they didn't want to start reprinting the Joe Kelly series from number one in volume two, just so people couldn't skip over volume one and only buy the good stuff.
Yeah. For anyone who's not enticed enough to want to go back and read those, let me just say what I really want. I want a nice big poster of Deadpool Rochambeauing Captain America for the Earth.
Oh, Rochambeau.
They're having that wonderful, huge, deep moment, and there's Deadpool lost in thought. He goes, tell you what, I'll Rochambeau you for it. He's like, okay, what's that?
Let me show you.
they have like a big American flag banner in the background, and there's like
definitely Captain a burst of stars.
Captain America, he's up in the air. He's kicked him so hard, he's up in the air.
Oh God!
It was like, yeah, that's the best thing I ever.
That was a very heavy story, otherwise, but they ended it on the.
Well, they were still just like, and now we're gonna go back to being Deadpool. It was just awesome. They played that perfectly. That whole swath of stories is just perfect, and the ones after it aren't so bad. That they're not quite as good as that first storyline, but it's just amazing. Those are just the best. And Deadpool's funny and now and good now. And they finally gotten for a while they had writers who weren't quite as on the ball with him, but I think they've hit some people now who are doing it right very consistently. But it's still just not that awesome, deep story with it most of the time. They're not hitting that note.
Yeah.
And it'd be hard to their credit. I mean, I'm not entirely sure how you would pull that off again. That was really good.
So there you go. on that note.
On that tangent.
That is our show.
Tangents are my superpower.
This week, yes. It is your mutant ability. But it's a good one. Again, thank you for joining us. Please go to our website, tfradio.net. You're going to find our show. You're going to find all the other shows that we have there. Exciting stuff. Good stuff. Check it out. There you go. That's it. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And please tune in next week where it will be Fanboy versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.